right, welcome back. Continuing to listen to the weekend edition of the KE Report, back half of this show. We're going to do a KE Report market quick take. This is where Shad and I just give our insights on the metals market. We're going to talk copper. We might get into critical minerals. More of an inside view of what we're hearing from companies, what we're seeing at conferences, and also a takeaway from some of our interviews over the last month or two as a bit of a refresher for all of you, all of our listeners that are interested in the resource sector. The last time we did a market quick take, it was after the Las Vegas Money Show. That's the end of February. A lot's happened in the resource sector since that time, even though you could make the argument that the sector's been pretty boring. So let's get into this. Shad, man, I'm looking forward to this one. You and I were both in Vancouver at some conferences. So really wondering, first of all, how'd you like the conference in Vancouver?
Yeah, Corey, great to be on here again. I love doing these episodes together where we can just share some of our thoughts. And we were just at the Metals Investor Forum in Vancouver over the last weekend. And my takeaway was that it was a stark difference to the January Metals Investor Forum. So from MIF to MIF, January was a fever pitch. If people remember, that was when gold was breaking 5,000 and silver was hitting triple digits. This time it felt very muted. It felt like there was a good crowd there and they were engaged and there were some good companies there. The newsletter writers there do a good job of ferreting out which companies have some good exploration work going on. And there was some good news, but it just seemed rather muted. It seemed like we'd had a rough slog of March and April. And so by the time we got to that event, we'd had a couple of days of rally. So people were encouraged by the rally, but it just didn't have the same kind of excitement. There wasn't much traffic around the booths. And in talking to some of the companies, they felt like things were a bit lackluster, to say, just to put it that way. So I was excited to get some of the fundamental news updates and talk to some new companies, and some of them maybe showing up on the show as we stay in touch with them. But it just didn't have the same kind of excitement that January did.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. But in a way, I think we kind of expected that because of the pullback correction that the market has gone through. That being said, holy, a lot of these companies have money. They're all doing a lot of work out there. There's a lot of money going into the ground. And they're excited to put out the news, but there definitely is a change in tone. Remember last year when companies could roll back their shares, put out that news release, and their share price would go up. Really, every drill result was getting rewarded. And now you need to have back to pretty good drill results. And quite frankly, I also find it interesting. It was a couple of years ago, remember, Shad, when people or companies did not want to put out drill results. They'd batch them. They'd save the whole program for the end. Now we're seeing companies put out one drill hole at a time. And if they're good, the market is still rewarding them. But if they're not maybe as good as the last batch, I've actually seen some stocks come under pressure. But I think that just more so ties into the overall sector. Let's go through some of the, I think, more important technicals here, because what we've seen recently is silver and even the gold stocks and silver stocks outperforming gold. The technicals right now, I think, are hands down the most important thing for everyone to pay attention to. GLD, that topped right at its 50-day moving average. So that is something for us to watch closely. You look at the longer-term charts, I know the argument. We're so far extended in any way. Monthly-wise, GLD would need to correct 40% just to hit that 50-month moving average. That's sloping higher. So again, that longer-term, I guess, bullish outlook, still very much intact, but watch that 50-day. But SLV, GDX, GDXJ, they all broke above that 50-day and are back testing it this week. So I really think right now watching the technicals is hands down the most important thing. Shad, your take on that?
Well, for me, I like to mix fundamentals and technicals together, but the beauty of looking at a chart is it incorporates all the fundamentals, all the sentiment, all the buying, all the reasons, all the narratives, and I think it smooths out the noise. So for me, I think it's an important tool. I know some people don't like technical analysis, but if you're not looking at the charts and trying to look at the flows of capital going in and out of these stocks, I think you're making an error in judgment. And so when I've been looking at the charts, I've been orientating around the weekly charts. I've been looking at silver and gold and copper and all the ETFs through the lens of the weekly, because I think it's got less noise than the daily. And I've just been encouraged to see, honestly, I wasn't expecting to see the last 2 weeks be so positive for silver or for gold or for copper. And I feel like it'd be criminal not to mention that copper has put in its all-time highest weekly close to end last week. And then the first 2 days of this week on Monday and Tuesday, We're recording this at the end of the week, but the very beginning of the week, there was all-time daily closes on the copper chart. Those are important. When any chart makes a new all-time high, it's worth noting. So I'm surprised at how strong silver and copper has been relative to gold. What do you make of that? Like the difference between kind of the industrial metals versus the monetary metal?
Yeah, there's something weird going on here. Gold has been too boring, and that is, I think, just showing us a slowdown in the market. But the money has rotated, I think, and we're still seeing it rotate even out of gold in a sense, just because gold's boring, into more assets, different assets, resources, and metals like copper, as you said. Even the critical minerals continue to get bought, and silver. Look, silver's just a weird beast. I don't like silver as much. I've said that many times because I almost think it can act like a meme stock sometimes and just go through these wild swings. But you look at the chart. Silver again still looks pretty good. Copper definitely looks the best. And we've been saying that for the last year, though, is that the copper chart, the corrections have been shallow. They've been bought back very quickly. And now we're at all-time highs. Now, the one thing that I do find interesting about copper, though, or at least the copper market, you look at COPEX, that's not at all-time highs. That has not been following the recent copper price. I don't have an answer for that, but that is, I think, something that we need to watch. Chad, you notice that too? That's good. The copper stocks, even though the ones in my portfolio are doing well, COPEX broadly, and that's the copper miners ETF, that hasn't hit all-time highs. It's close, but it's not anywhere near what copper's done.
Yeah, I was noting that. I write a article in Substack on my page, the Excelsior Prosperity page, and I wrote an article called Spring Fling, and I was talking about the moves in copper and gold and silver. But when I got to copper, I said, look, copper is at all-time highs, but COPEX and COPJ and a lot of the copper stocks actually are not nearly as close to where they were in January when there was just that brief pop and then drop. And then it sold off just like the other metals at the end of January and had its own corrective period in March and April. But this move higher is more stable. And on the week, again, we're going to have put in the highest weekly close again, back to back highest weekly closes of all time. You would think the stocks would be leveraging that and that COPEX and COPJ would be burning metal, burning rubber to get out of the start gates. And instead, it's been a muted reaction from investors. I can't explain it either, other than to say that maybe investors don't believe these numbers are going to hold. But I don't remember anybody on their bingo card saying, get ready for the breakout to all-time highs in copper in May. I mean, there's people that are perpetually bullish, but this is like a move that I think has been a stealth rally. And I think that some of the stocks have been responding nicely. I think this might be a nice place to point out a stock that we've had on the show a number of times, Arizona Sonoran, is at all-time highs right now. So it's one of the few stocks that is leveraging the move. It's being taken over by Hudbay. And just this week, the shareholders have voted with a 99% weigh-in that they want to have the shares transfer over to Hudbay. So that's a good transaction. It's a true takeover at an all-time high. It responded to the copper price. And even Hudbay, which has been under a little pressure for making the acquisition, which is normal, it's even doing well and it's at high level. So I think there's some individual issues that are leveraging the move in copper, but I'm surprised the producers, which are in COPEX or COPJ and some of these other ETFs like ICOP, aren't leveraging the move more. Do you think that it's just a disbelief factor, or do you think that investors always have a lagging factor and it takes a while for them to process what this means for earnings?
I think there's opportunity, but I think the copper space is unlike the gold space where people come rushing in. I think they stick more to quality. And I think that's what we are seeing in this market is that this copper move, it's been just consistent, which in a way I don't think has brought in a ton of short-term momentum players. I'm sure some people are in there, and even some of the technicians we've talked to have been trading it, but I think it's more individual names. You look at that Hudbay chart. Whoa, a year ago, that was a $12 stock on the Toronto Exchange, and now it's a $37 stock. Another stock that I follow that I have a position in copper is Faraday. That is at all-time highs. So there are some copper names that are doing very well. But I do see money really consolidating at the top of the food chain and in what I think are some of the better copper stocks. But there's the big question. Does that trickle down into the juniors? We've talked a ton about the trouble that the juniors, the explorers, have funding drill programs because to delineate copper, you need to drill a lot of holes and spend a lot of money, but money's more available now. So if anything, we'll see where the copper price goes. Obviously, if copper drops, the whole bullish narrative falls on its head. But right now, I still see a lot of opportunity in copper and potentially down into the junior copper plays that haven't moved that right now, as long as they have money, if they have a lot of money, and if they are drilling out something of interest, maybe not pre-discovery, but post-discovery, I think there's still a lot of opportunity there. I'm sure our listeners have a lot of examples of other copper stocks that are running, but right now there's a lot of opportunity in copper, or at least that's what I'm seeing.
Well, I think that with the juniors, one of the biggest concerns is how are they going to pay for the drilling, because it is expensive to drill deep in copper porphyries. But if you make a copper porphyry discover, you will be richly rewarded by the marketplace. I mean, one of the stocks that was really running at the MIF, and it's more for the gold than the copper, but they have a mix of both, was San Lorenzo. And it's because they tagged into a new porphyry. And so that stock was up, I think, like 50, 60%. It was the talk of the MIF. Another company we've had on the show recently, Kingfisher Metals, was trending quite well. And a lot of people wrote me about meeting with them while I was at the conference, which we do. We talk to Dustin regularly, and we just had him on the show last week. But I think people are just excited for more companies to make a copper discovery. I guess I'm just surprised that the companies pulling the copper out of the ground, the red metal, and making money on it aren't running harder on this breakout to new highs. But to your point about Faraday, and I would put Arizona Sonoran in the same bucket, the developers have been doing well. Another company we have on the show pretty regularly, Surge Copper, that's up at all-time highs. There's been a big run in companies like Hot Chili, which we've talked about before on the show. So a lot of the developers that have pounds in the ground, they've been doing quite well, and they've been running big on the news. Another company, I don't own a position in this, but Gunnison Copper has been running. And so a lot of the developers are the ones that seem to be getting the retail investor inflows, and maybe the producers are just not in the same bucket that you would with gold and silver because it doesn't get that frenzy. So maybe they're more institutional based. Do you think that there's any difference between how retail views these versus institutions?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. More retail, more money for the juniors. You know, the retail loves the higher risk. And hey, Kingfisher is a great example of what I think the sector still has ahead of it here. Kingfisher has just been on an absolute tear, but it's still not even at all-time highs. It had a rough 2022 and 2021 as it was trending lower right after it came public, but they seem to be onto something. Volume is way up. This is early stage. I hate to say that. I think our listeners know how much I hate to say that, but there's still a lot of opportunity in copper, especially in the junior side. But I also think the developer side too. These guys are doing very well. Any more comments on copper? Or can we move it on? I have a couple more comments on some of the gold silver charts to look at. But Shad, you want to make another comment on copper?
I want to make a comment on silver because you said you're not a big fan. I think people that listen know that it's my favorite. Like, out of everything, I love uranium and silver the best. I mean, I love the commodity sector. I'm in all of it. I'm in critical minerals. I'm in oil and gas. I like it all. But silver, I like how schizophrenic it is. I like how crazy it is. And I think it's telling that the gold silver ratio is down in the low 50s because it shows that silver is making an advance on gold while gold has been relatively boring and range bound. I'm surprised it's happening again right now because I was expecting more weakness in the precious metals. I think that the summertime, the summer doldrums, is seasonally a weaker period of time. And also, we had that big correction in March. April was kind of a mixed bag, but it wasn't great. So the fact that in the middle of the last week that silver just started running and it got all the way up to like $90 surprised me, even though I'm a fan of silver. It is a little crazy for people to follow it, and but I like the hecticness. It's kind of like nat gas. Nat gas is the widow maker, silver is the heartbreaker. I like how bizarro silver can get, and I try to use that volatility as an active trader to my advantage, but I know it's hard to follow if you're a value investor and it's bouncing all over the place. So I just want to say that about silver before you get into some of the other technicals.
Fair enough. Hey, you're a trader. You even said it, right? So you need to have the stomach for that, and you need to be that active. You're very good at it, but that's not for everybody. That's kind of why I avoid silver, is that you go through these euphoric highs and then these devastating crashes. But if you can time it well, you can do very well in it. And fair enough, I do hold some silver stocks too, but yeah, I don't like the environment where we see silver drastically outperform gold, because over history, that has marked tops in the sector. Yes, you can sometimes have gold catch up, but most of the time over history, if silver spikes and that gold silver ratio drops down to lower levels, and right now we are at a pretty low level, around 50, that is fairly low when you look at a 25-year chart. I know historically, fine, we can have that discussion, but quite frankly, over 25 years, down in the 50 range for that gold silver ratio is low. And again, to me, history says that it can be in for a bit of a topping pattern. Not an overall top, but it definitely can show some worrisome signs, and who knows where this goes. But the gold stocks do follow silver closely. Just a couple of things to mention on these charts for SLV, GDX, and GDXJ. We do have a gap in the charts on May 6th, right when this rebound started. Question is, will that get filled? GDX, that's around 88. GDXJ, that's around 120. And for silver, SLV, it is doing the best out of all these charts from what I see, because it put in a higher low and it put in a, well, at least it changed the trend of lower highs. That being said, it's just in a tight range. Really, all we're doing now is waiting to see where the break is going to be, either higher or lower for a future direction. And all the technicians we've talked to are really pointing to the end of summer. So this could be a further consolidation. But look, Shed, you brought up this whole ABC correction too. This rebound, it's really confusing, isn't it?
Yeah, kind of threw the idea on its head, and I'm glad you brought that up. I've been writing about this as well, but if you look at GDX, if you look at SIL, if you look at SILJ, if you look at these ETFs, I was expecting March, the downdraft. There was three really ugly red candles in a row, and I'm looking at this on the weekly chart, and I think, again, the weekly chart cuts out a lot of the daily noise. So three terrible weeks in a row in March, that's an A wave down. Then four really good weeks in the blue or in the green on your chart. That was in late March into early April. That would be the B wave up. Then there was two ugly candles in a row the first 2 weeks going down into a C wave, and I expect that to keep going through May and then possibly into June. And that would tie in with the seasonal weakness. Our buddy Jordan Roiburn has talked about some of these analogs he was also looking at late May, maybe early June as a place to bottom. But the rally we've had the last 2 weeks puts these really bullish weekly candles on the mix. And so it's turned what was an ABC correction into more of like a W-shaped, kind of a double bottoming, but it didn't truly double bottom. The other side of the W would be a lot higher. It also hasn't broken all the way out to form a full W. So it's either one of two things. Either we are going to see kind of that double bottom W-shaped recovery where things just really rally. I think that's what most of the bulls are hoping for. My concern in the back of my mind is, maybe this is just a counter trend rally in that C wave, and we still are going to get the rest of the C wave. And this was just a relief rally before the next shoe drop. So I think the jury is still out, and I think it's hard to have a strong opinion either way right now because it is a whipsaw. I guess if I had to place a bet, my bet is that we still got to consolidate a little bit more, which we would want. It would be healthy because it would bring in the energy for more of a sustained move higher in the sector.
Yeah, look, these charts are a mess. And that's why I think volume is dried up. That's why a lot of the momentum players are ignoring the sector, because they're not showing us any direction right now. Yes, this is short-term moves, but let's face it, there is no direction here. So let's see when we get a bounce. And I guarantee if it's a bounce or a breakdown, we will see a lot more volume come in. But boy, oh boy, volume is boring. And the charts are also very choppy to trade, which is offering some opportunities in some of these stocks. But look, before we get into the stocks, Chad, I know you want to talk critical minerals. I know how much you like critical minerals. I am intrigued by them, but you follow it way more closely than me. But some of these chats that I'm on with promoters and CEOs and management teams, man, they just keep on bringing up these charts. They keep posting these charts, and it's just insane what some of these things are doing. So, look, what's the lay of the land critical mineral wise?
Yeah, and critical minerals is a big bucket. There's 60 different metals and minerals on the list now with the US GS. So it's hard to narrow it down into a scope. But what's been running is lithium has been running, which, again, hardly anybody had that on their bingo card for this year. But if you look at the ETF LIT, this thing is up and to the right and it's been breaking out. It's not at all-time highs, but it's definitely at 52-week highs. And so it's a big move in lithium. I think the best ETF for people to grasp the critical mineral space is REMIX, REMX. And the reason I like that one is because it's basically a hodgepodge of rare earths. Like, it's called a rare earths and strategic metal ETF, but it's really rare earths, lithium, tungsten, antimony, moly, and titanium. So it's a nice mix of across the board of companies. It's a smorgasbord. That thing is up and to the right. And if you look at Remix and you look at LIT, I think they're up like 40% roughly on the year. They're crushing it compared to GDX, GDXJ, SIL, SILJ, COPEX. So while the precious metals and copper and the ETFs and the related stocks have done well, the ETFs for these critical minerals have been blowing them away. And while they corrected a little bit in March, it wasn't as deep. And then they rebounded for the last part of March and April. They really made a lot of traction. Now, some of this ties into the macro and the sense that we still have an issue with supply and the Chinese export controls. A lot of eyeballs on the Trump and Xi meeting that's going on right now to see how much of this comes up in the discussion. But it's been more focused on the Strait of Hormuz. But what's interesting is if you pull up individual stocks, and we can talk individual stocks, some of these things are up in an insane fashion. The tungsten stocks, in particular, have been the frothiest group. And a year ago, nobody could spell tungsten. Now there is probably about 10 stocks, and they are all up 300%, 500%, 1,000%. The leader of tungsten for producers would be Almonty, ALM. And if you look at a chart of ALM, I pulled it back like just 2 years. I think it's up like 26x in the last 2 years. So, and that's because if you want tungsten production, where are you going to go? There's not a lot of choices. So, what happens in critical minerals and why I like it and why I've been in them for the last 15 years is there's not many choices. And so, when capital does go in there, it all squeezes into just a very few names. And those names get probably overvalued and they get insane multiples, but that's because there's nowhere else to go. So that's why I like the critical minerals. Rare earth stocks have been doing good as well. I'll point out one other one. Neo Performance Materials on the Toronto Stock Exchange under the ticker NEO. Now, this is a company, unlike a lot of the fluff that we see out there in the space, that actually separates rare earth elements, the 17 different. Some people say 15, some say 17, but they separate them. They produce permanent magnets. They've been doing it for decades. They learned it in China. They're applying it globally. They're in about six or seven different countries. Honestly, I don't know why the US government didn't give them some money as a friendly supplier instead of MP Materials. But if you look at a chart of Neo Performance Materials, it's a great, I think, bellwether for how the rare earth sector is doing from a legitimate company. So again, whether it's rare earths or antimony or tungsten or lithium, the critical minerals have drawn in a lot of investors that don't invest in precious metals. They maybe came in through the doorway of electric vehicles or AI data centers, or I know a lot of generalists that are in some of these stocks and they don't hold any gold or silver or copper stocks. So I just think it's an interesting space to be part of in the commodity sector. That's why I like it.
These things are crazy. Let's look at that Remix chart. Sorry, 2020, it was a $21 stock. 2 years later, it was a $120 stock. And then 3 years after that, it was a $31 stock. And now it's back up at 100 and it's still running. These are crazy sectors, okay? And look, one of the reasons why I've stayed away from some of these sectors, especially rare earths, is that I've just seen these cycles a couple times. They're usually very short cycles. So, Shad, you shared a ton of stocks there, and a number of them are doing very well. A lot of these are doing very well. But how do you decide to sell these positions? When is enough enough in these sectors that eventually, inevitably, always turn back around and devastate you on the way down?
Yeah, I agree. And they are like all commodities. They're like whack-a-mole. They're up for a little bit and they're down. Look what's happened with oil. Look at nat gas. Look at gold and silver and copper. They've all been up and down. Critical minerals usually have a lot shorter shelf life. So I started with rare earths back in 2010, and 2010, 2011, 2012 were amazing. And then it was a desert for years. So you can get left in the dust. You can get left being a bag holder for years. It's not for the faint of heart. But I think what we're seeing with defense metals, and I would put antimony and tungsten in the defense metal bucket and rare earths to some degree, is that these problems are not getting solved. The sins of the past of letting everything go to China and letting all the processing go there are now coming home to roost, not just in the US or Canada, but in Europe and the rest of Asia. All countries know they need to lock down supplies of these. There's a lot of agreements going on between nations to try to figure out supply chains. And I think that this time is going to have a little more legs than previous cycles just because there is no supply of rare earths, meaningful supply outside of China. There are some producers, and there are some people, like there's Lynas in Australia. There is MP Materials. There is Neo Performance Materials. But there's a very small list of companies that are even producing it. With the tungsten, again, Almonty that I shared is, other than EQ Resources, is the only other producer that I'm aware of. Everything else is development or exploration. So what I see this cycle is more legs to critical minerals, because people realize that there is no other option. They have to find a way outside of China. The one caveat would be lithium. The fact that lithium has been so strong, there's no shortage of lithium. There's plenty of lithium available in other countries, and there's other supply chains. There's a lot of producers, there's a lot of developers. Over the last 10 years, we have found a crap ton of lithium. So I feel like the legs could come out of that one quicker. But the fact that it's running like it is in this narrative, along with the rest of the critical minerals, just shows that this thing has more legs than prior cycles. None of these things, no commodity, can you feel good about holding for years and years and years, because, again, they're all a game of whack-a-mole. So I would make the point that all commodities are cyclical. And if you're just trying to buy and hold these things for a decade or two, this is the wrong sector. Like, this is a sector that should at least be traded from a position trading every few months to a year, or maybe at least every couple of years. It's not something where you just put everything into a company and then sit there for a decade. This is not a blue chip stock. So I think that critical minerals are the epitome of that, but I don't think they're that different than something like oil and gas or gold and silver that are also very cyclical.
Yeah, they just seem to have shorter cycles. But hey, maybe that all changes if the world really is serious about figuring out where the supply comes from, not just depending on China for that. Let's move over to more stock specific stuff. We have some major M&A to talk about. That's what I want to start with. Just this week, Equinox bid for Orla Mining, $7 billion deal, Canadian. Combined market cap of both of these companies would be around $17 billion on a fully diluted basis, around $18.5 billion. What I think is the most impressive thing, and the one thing that I love about Equinox, is that they're growing. They're growing through acquisition, fine, but they have a path now to pretty much 2 million ounces a year in the near term. I did some running of numbers on this, and I thought, how does this stack up to the rest of the sector? Newmont, they're at around 5.3 million ounces. That's their guidance for this year, which is actually lower than the last few years because they've been shedding assets. Barrick, that's around a 3 million ounce a year producer. Agnico, that's a little over 3 million ounces. Kinross, that's around 2 million ounces. So Equinox, if this deal goes through, they are now a major. I think we have to talk about them as a major if this deal goes through. And I love the aspect that they are out there buying assets. That's what we need in this sector. We need more leadership from the majors to buy good assets and operate them properly. Equinox is showing us that they're doing it. And you look at the chart, their EQX on the AMEX and TSX. That's been a very strong stock. Yes, it's not a junior, but there's a lot of, I think, safety in that stock as metals prices, even if they flatline here. Chad, we haven't even talked about this yet. So, what are your thoughts on Equinox going after Orla?
I actually love it because I've watched Equinox for a long time. I remember before it was even Equinox that they came together by consolidating three or four different companies into a big roll-up strategy. Then they bought Premier and spun the rest out into i80. Then they eventually got down the road and bought Calibre, which we had followed for a long time, and massed up even bigger. And the complaint since the Calibre merger has been that, well, they were going to do 1 million ounces a year, but then a couple of their mines, they scaled back and they pulled out of one of them. And then some of them are just taking longer to ramp up, Greenstone and Valentine. But I knew they were going to get there eventually. This deal throws them right over the line. They're now a senior producer in my mind. They're going to produce more than 1 million ounces of gold per year. Not an easy feat, and not an easy feat to keep going. And I think Orla was the kind of company that was good. You know, they were a good, solid producer, but they weren't going to attract a ton of capital from investors because they just weren't going to be able to grow the same way. So as a bolt-on addition to Equinox, they'll actually get a better valuation multiplier inside of Equinox. And I think it's going to bring in a different class of investor. There's people that invest in Agnico Eagle or Newmont or Barrick that don't touch a lot of the names that we bring on the show, but they would touch a company like this because it's going to be a big enough, it's going to be one of the big boys now. And in an environment where their scuttlebutt that we may lose one of the big boys. Barrick is debating splitting off their assets into two different vehicles. And if one of those vehicles, the scuttlebutt is that Newmont could make a move on it, and then the other vehicle would be a lot of their higher risk assets, well, you know, we'd be losing another major. And we've seen a trend over the last couple of years of majors buying majors. The whole reason that Barrick got big in the first place was they bought Randgold. The whole reason that Newmont got big is they bought Newcrest and Goldcorp. So it's nice to see Equinox coming to the plate here as a new major. And I would make the point that Coeur Mining, because it just bought New Gold at the end of last year and it also bought Silvercrest, it's getting to the point where they're very close to 1 million ounces of gold equivalent ounces per year production as well. So I like the creation of new senior miners through acquisitions. And I think Equinox has done this flawlessly. They've executed, and I think this is a smart transaction.
Absolutely. This needs to be celebrated, if not for anything else, other than there is a new major who is focused on growth. Remember, Equinox and Calibre came together pretty much on a merger business combination less than a year ago. That was completed in June of last year. Everyone thought that they had their hands full with Greenstone, with Valentine, building and operating those new mines. Now they're out here making this acquisition. I think in every way possible, this is positive for the sector. Very good. Brings another major to the table and is showing other majors there's acquisition potential out there. Go out and acquire. Use this money that you're making. Another acquisition that we should talk about, royalty space. Elemental Royalty Corp buying Vizsla Royalties, about a 327 Canadian million dollar deal. This one surprised me, to be honest with you. I thought Vizsla Royalties was just going to sit there as a royalty company and keep trucking along, maybe make some acquisitions, build themselves a just comfortable royalty company. But Elemental swooping in here, I am surprised. I'm shocked that this happened. I actually think it'll be a good deal for Elemental too. I think this is a great royalty that Vizsla has on that Panuco project. But yeah, Shad, I'm shocked.
I am too. We were talking about this just very briefly before we hit record today, but I was not expecting this. I talked to Vizsla Royalties at the Metals Investor Forum in January, and the impression I got was they were just going to sit there and just let it hang out. I also felt like it had grown to the point, because Panuco has grown so big, that it was getting very richly valued as a royalty. Now, I think maybe some of the tension in Mexico lately has pressured both companies, Vizsla and Vizsla Royalties, to the point where maybe they thought now was the time to strike. But I think people listening, when I'm a big fan of Elemental Royalty Corp. We've been following Elemental Altus and EMX separately for many years on this program. I've been invested in both, in full disclosure. I'm a fan of the company. I had actually divested from Vizsla just because of some of the tension, but now at least people that are in the royalty company have exposure to the Panuco project. And I think that Fred and Dave over there are savvy deal makers, and they're looking at this from the standpoint that, yeah, you're paying a lot for it. I think it was 327 million Canadian, which comes out to around 239, 240 US. That's a lot of money to pay for a royalty. It's the biggest transaction their team has ever done. And we were looking to see bigger transaction in the royalty space, and this year has not disappointed. We've seen big moves in Franco. We've seen big moves from Royal Gold. Some of these happened at the end of last year, but we've seen some big transactions with Triple Flag. We've seen some big transactions for a mid-sized company like Elemental Royalty Corp. This is a significant capital allocation, but they're looking at this producing 7,500 gold equivalent ounces every year into the future once it goes into production. So, providing this mine gets built and goes into production, which I think it's too big of a mine to ignore, it will get built. I think this is going to be a smart move for the long haul for Elemental Royalty Corp, but it did shock me. I had to read the news release twice. I couldn't believe that they picked this asset off. So, hey, it's another M&A deal in the space, and it's definitely noteworthy. And I wish Elemental Royalty Corp well.
And hey, what a great move by the team at Vizsla as well. They completed that spinoff of that royalty company in June of 2024. So less than 2 years, created over $300 million in value for the shareholders of Vizsla Silver that took that royalty. And look, when it came to market, it was about $1.25. It never even touched that level since it came out. So yes, it went through a correction, but what a successful transaction that has turned out to be. But again, wow, good for Elemental Royalty for taking that asset. And I think long term that's going to pay off for them. But Elemental Royalty is also a company that is growing very quickly in the royalty space. Shad, we've gone on long enough, man. You got anything else? Anything else you want to leave the audience with right now? Any predictions coming up?
I guess I would just wrap it up with, I think it's an interesting time in the space, and that in the last couple of weeks, the sentiment has improved. Sentiment always follows price. But I'm also prepared, and I would just have people prepare themselves for this could just be a countertrend rally within a corrective move that isn't quite finished yet. I think a lot of technicians we brought on the show would like to see things consolidate at a lower level. I was looking at gold and silver to maybe go back and scare people a little bit more. I wanted to see more people thrown in the towel. I actually wanted to see a little bit more disappointment, and I wanted to hear more and more calls that the bull market was over and that January was definitely the top. And we have to keep in mind that could be the case still, but I don't think that it is. I'm still bullish longer term on gold, silver, and copper continue to make even higher highs, but I wanted to see the narrative come out that the bull market was over and that people start throwing in the towel, because that's the kind of environment that forms a bottom and brings in enough new buyers and energy to make a breakout move higher. So my only concern with the last couple of weeks is it could be a false positive. But hey, if it just keeps running from here, that's not going to hurt anybody's feeling that's listening to this call.
Oh, absolutely. Anybody that bought in the last kind of month at the end of that correction has done very well. Kudos to you. I'm gonna chat on this one. We don't know the future direction here, but I think there are still a lot of good opportunities. Copper clearly is our favorite. We are undoubtedly going to have a ton of news coming out. And for everyone invested in these stocks, make sure the company you're in has news. There's so many companies doing a lot of good work out there. Not all that work will be rewarded. We don't know what drill results will look like. We don't know what kind of stuff can come out of the woodwork in terms of production delays. But overall, there are companies with a ton of catalysts this year. Make sure you're in the ones that have those catalysts that you think can move the market. Do not get stuck in ones that don't have much news, because there is a good chance those will drift. And quite frankly, you have better opportunities in those stocks that are doing work and spending that money right now. We'll wrap it up here, everyone. Thanks for tuning into this weekend show. I hope you enjoyed both the segments on this weekend show. Please keep in touch with Shad and I. We'd love to hear all your feedback. Our email addresses are in the show notes. And for everyone who missed during the week on our website and podcast, listen to all our daily editorials and company updates. Just search the KE Report. Everyone, thanks for tuning in, Shad. This was a good one. I really enjoyed it. We'll do more of them.
Thanks, Corey. Looking forward to the next one.
The Corlin Economics Report is produced for A.B. Corlin and Associates. Opinions expressed on this program are intended solely for the entertainment of our listeners, do not constitute investment advice, and are not necessarily those of this network, radio station, or our sponsors. Find out more about this program and today's guests by visiting www.kereport.com. For Al Corlin, this is Colleen Robbins. Join us again next week for the Corlin Economics Report.